All right, Alexander, we are here with Mr. Robert Barnes. How are you doing, Robert?
Good, good.
Good. Where can people find you?
At vivabarneslaw.locals.com.
We will put the link down in the description box down below. Alexander, you want to brief us on your discussions with the Assange legal team, and then you and Robert can discuss a lot of the legal stuff in and around Assange, and we'll just move the video forward based on your information. So, Alexander, what did you guys speak about over the weekend?
Right. Well, first of all, I should say I wasn't able to speak to the Assange legal team because they've clamped up like clams. But I did speak to the head of WikiLeaks, Christine Hrafnsson. And I also spoke to Stunden, which is the chief editor of Stunden, which is this magazine that has just published this article about Thoroddsen and did this interview. Thoroddsen is this Icelandic sociopath who is a major witness in the FBI's case. And I've also spoken to various other people who are on the, you know, fairly well informed and involved in the case. So just a few quick takes. Firstly, the High Court in England. And can I just say, as Robert undoubtedly knows, we have an incredibly complex legal system in England and an incredibly complex court system in England for which I used to once upon a time work. Anyway, the High Court has granted the US permission to appeal the decision that was made back in December, January by the Westminster Magistrates Court to refuse Assange's extradition. The problem is that we are not getting very much information. I said I tried to speak to the legal team. We're not getting very much information about what the actual grounds of appeal are going to be, because all we know is that the permission to appeal that's been granted is very narrow. Now, what causes a lot of confusion in Britain is that appeals go through two stages. Firstly, you have to apply to the court for permission to appeal, and then that's reviewed by a judge, usually without a hearing, sometimes with a hearing, and only if you get permission to appeal is there an actual hearing itself where the court decides whether or not to actually consider the appeal itself. And apparently there was some kind of a discussion, and the appeal, the grounds of appeal that were allowed were very narrow. Now, a number of things the US tried to challenge. They tried to challenge decisions that the previous court, the judge, Judge Baritza in the magistrates court, decisions that she made about Assange's health. The High Court said, you can't do that. We're not prepared to look at any question of Assange's health. We will go with what the lower court judge said. They tried to challenge the lower court's decision to allow certain witnesses, expert witnesses, to come forward. The High Court again said, we are not prepared to look at that at all. That's something that was fully within the lower court judge's discretion. We're not going to question or go beyond or round that. But we are apparently prepared to consider points the US government wants to make about the conditions of detention in which Assange will be held if he is sent to the United States and if he is eventually convicted there. And he will not be sent, so the US government now says, to a SAMS. And perhaps, Robert, you could tell us a bit more about what a SAMS is, but it seems to be a very, very high security type prison where people are mainly held, apparently, in very tight conditions and with little contact with other people. They won't send him to a SAMS, or so they now say. And they also say that it's possible, if Assange agrees and if wants it and if he's convicted, that they will send him to Australia and he will be held there. Now, The problem with all of this, and this is what I simply do not understand, and I've been trying to get answers, and there's been no real explanations to this for me, is that all of this is what we call in England new evidence. In other words, these comments that the US authorities are making about where they will put him if he's convicted and about sending him to Australia if he wants to be sent to Australia is evidence which was not presented to the lower court by the US government. And the usual practice in appeals is that the appeal court refuses to consider new evidence. They will only look at the evidence which was before the judge, because the argument is that an appeal is no longer a battle between the parties in the case. It's a question of whether or not the judge made the right decision on the evidence that was put to the judge. And the judge cannot, therefore, on that basis, be faulted for making a decision which did not consider evidence which was not put to her. Now, in all the time that I worked in the High Court, in the Royal Courts of Justice, and I'm talking about 12 years, I was there for 12 years, and I was mainly handling appeals, I can only remember one instance when the High Court agreed to consider a case, an appeal, based on new evidence. And that new evidence in that case involved the fact that the judge whose decision was being appealed had had a relationship with one of the parties in the case, which the judge had not disclosed. It was that kind of thing. This kind of evidence that we are hearing about, on the contrary, seems to me to be exactly the sort of evidence which could have been presented to the trial at the trial, which should have been presented at the trial, and I don't understand how or why it could be possible that the appeal court would even consider it at an appeal stage. The only thing I can think of is that possibly the US government is saying, well, they weren't given the opportunity to provide this evidence. But I think if that is right, then the blame probably lies with them because they didn't prepare for the lower court case properly. Anyway, I asked Kristin Hrafnsson, who is at WikiLeaks, for some explanation about this. But he was very cagey. He didn't tell me very much. And he didn't seem to understand very much about the procedure either, I have to say. And I've just not been able to get any real clarity about this at all. Now, there's one other thing I wanted to say, and this is perhaps another possible thing, is that there's been talk that Assange's lawyers are looking to cross-appeal. And apparently there hasn't been a cross-appeal yet. And there hasn't been a decision to bring a cross appeal, but that is now being considered. And the idea is that if this thing is going to go to a full appeal hearing, probably in November, then Assange's lawyers also want to make various points, which will be much more related, not to questions just of Assange's health, but and the prison conditions, but mainly and principally about the rights of a journalist to publish information. And that goes to the heart, much more to the heart of what this whole issue is all about. And apparently, and as I understand it, that is being seriously considered. And it could very well be, it might be, that the reason permission to appeal was granted to the US government in this very strange way is more in order to allow Assange's lawyers to come forward with their cross appeal than because the High Court itself thinks that this appeal that we've heard about up to now has really very much basis. Because to my mind, it's both contrary to principles, legal principles, to base an appeal decision on this new evidence, but also anyway, there are problems with this new evidence, which we'll no doubt be talking about further in this programme. So it could be that this is an attempt to provide a setting for a much bigger discussion of the case itself at the appeal stage in November, and that's what we should be looking at. So that's the summary. I hope I've made it clear. It's sometimes rather complicated. As I said, we have a very complicated process here, but I hope I've explained it as clearly as I can. And if there's any points you wanted me to clarify, then please do.
The High Court, how many justices, and is there like a political profile of how they've ruled in prior extradition cases?
Right. The High Court consists of about 120 judges, but the number of judges who will sit on this panel is perhaps going to be three, conceivably five. The judge who would have made this decision probably on the papers is a single judge. Probably, as I said, decision was almost certainly, in fact, made on the papers. I, by the way, checked at the High Court itself. There is up to now no written transcript of any decision, which suggests to me that this was a paper decision to grant permission. By the way, it took 6 months to make. That in itself is extraordinary, especially in a case where somebody's in prison. I was expecting it to be decided within a month. That suggests there's been an enormous amount of discussion about how this case is going to work out. Now, judges in the High Court, the British system is to some extent different from that of the United States in that we don't have any system of confirming judges. There's no obvious role for Parliament in appointing judges. It's all done, in theory, by the Ministry of Justice. In practice, what happens is that the judges in the High Court are a self-selecting caste. They look at senior lawyers in various barristers' chambers. Those persons apply for judgeships, and it's done in that very English way that we all agree that so-and-so would make a really good High Court judge, and can we appoint him, please? It's actually a system which, surprisingly, has worked reasonably well because... But it does make for a very closed, very conservative, very caste-like system of people who sort of self-reproduce. Now, there are within the High Court judiciary people who are more liberal and there are people who are more conservative. Everybody agrees, and here I have spoken to the lawyers, and what I'm saying is I'm talking about Assange's lawyers. Everybody agrees that the ideal judge or group of judges for this case would be a deeply conservative lawyer, a deeply conservative group of judges who will follow the law precisely and who are committed to the law itself rather than more political judges who might have ambitions beyond that. And within this caste-like system that we have, we do have judges like that, people who have this very sort of strong commitment to the English law. And they have the tradition in England is not to agree to extradition in cases where people are, where there's a concern that if somebody's extradited, they could suffer injury to their health and things of that kind. There was a well-known case of a blogger, a man who calls himself, by the way, he saw his real name, Laurie Love, who was going to be extradited to the United States. And he was a blogger and also, importantly, a hacker. And there was all sorts of good reasons why he should have been extradited to the United States. And the High Court refused his extradition because they were worried that he would be sent to the wrong kind of prison in the United States. And if he was sent to that prison, it would affect his, it might actually cause his death. It might undermine his health. So there is that tradition in Britain. But of course, in a case like this, nothing can ever be taken for granted. And I said I worked in the Royal Courts of Justice for 12 years. I also have to say this, it's something many people will not like, but the fact is there is always communication between the government and the court. That is the reality. We sometimes used to get telephone calls from certain people. I'm not going to discuss who or in what circumstances. All I will say was that I was on the receiving end of some of those calls. So that does happen. I don't know to what extent it's going on now. In a case like this, it's bound to be going on to a great extent. But I will also say that there were cases that I know of where judges came under pressure and pushed back. So it's possible we could see all of this going on in this case. It's very difficult to judge how this is going to work out. But the permission to appeal that's been granted, and the fact that it's taken so long, 6 months, and the very narrow grounds of appeal. On the one hand, the narrow grounds make very little sense to me. I find them difficult to understand as new evidence. But on the other hand, it may be, as I said, that the High Court is opening the way for a broader discussion of the big issues on the basis that, for health reasons, Assange himself will not be extradited, because it would be surprising that they would go against a lower court judge on a point like this. Again, I hope I'm clear. I hope I've explained it well.
Robert, the realities of the Assange case, the fact that the U.S. is not letting up, how do you see things? I mean, it doesn't matter whether we're talking Trump, whether we're talking Biden, whether we were talking Obama. They want Assange no matter what. How do you see things going forward?
I mean, what's interesting is Assange had always assumed that Obama had an indictment against him, but the Obama administration ended up not pulling the trigger on that because they were First Amendment concerned at the end of the day. And Chelsea Manning ended up getting out early at the very end when Obama limited their sentence. So I think Obama always felt a little bit guilty about all of his attacks on whistleblowers. Not so guilty, he was able to do a lot about it, but a little bit guilty. And then the Trump administration, you know, Trump, I have reason to believe that I was part of the team of people advising Trump to pardon Assange at the end. And there were many of us that thought he would. And the pushback came from the institutional people, Pompeo, Barr, you know, people that how Trump still trusted those people was mind blowing. But they really used the January 6th cases to intimidate Trump. The message was that impeachment would go forward if he pardoned Assange, if he pardoned Snowden, if he pardoned any of the January 6 people, if he took any action like that, there was promises that he would be convicted in the Senate and that criminal cases might march forward. Now, I thought a lot of that was bluff and bluster. Republican Party couldn't afford that. You know, they can talk big, but they're not that suicidal in the Senate to try to take out Trump. But Trump kind of took the bait during that time period. That's why he also didn't declassify Spygate information, didn't declassify 9/11 information, didn't declassify John F. Kennedy assassination information, all of which he had promised he would during the campaign trail. The only thing that ended up getting declassified was the UFO stuff that came out more recently. So what I would say is a couple of things. I mean, in my experience, I've had experience with extradition in cases around the world, but particularly in England and Australia, where you have the most robust defenses available to you, to some degree in the Caribbean, depending on the circumstance, if you happen to get picked up there. But a lot of those politicians can stick you on a plane before before your hearing occurs. happened with a client of mine in Panama. But I think two things. I would be concerned if I was Assange's team that any appeal had been granted. Second, I would be very concerned that they're trying to come up with in the States, it's unheard of that new evidence is allowed in outside of very extraordinary circumstances. Now, extradition is always one of those flexible legal doctrines, so sometimes that's the pretext by which it comes in, but that's disconcerting. But if I were Assange's people, I think it makes sense to cross appeal to put the big issues in front of them, make them sign off on a horrendous free press decision if they're going to try to extradite him, put more political pressure on him. But the other is I would use it as an opportunity. So I've told, it's amazing. I always run in, Assange's people have been much better at this, but a lot of extradition lawyers, for whatever reason, don't understand how political almost every extradition case is and that the regular rules don't often apply. And so I had, they're trying to extradite Larry Williams, a client of mine from Australia years ago. And I wanted them to raise a whole bunch of political arguments. One side, every single example, every single case where any court has ever denied extradition. And I agree with you that prior hacker case is a great case for Julian Assange because it gives some political cover for the court. Say, okay, we've done this before. This is actually our tradition, et cetera. But the other I wanted to do that I've had some success with some lawyers doing and it has led to good outcomes for clients. I mean, for example, the U.S. government says that they'll never cut a deal with someone who flees under indictment. Well, I can tell you from personal experience, that's not the case. Not anymore, it isn't, but that's another story. But given that, is list all the times the U.S. government has lied. The U.S. government has lied in extradition hearings all around the world. They've said, oh, we'll only do this, we'll only do that, we won't sentence him here, we won't charge this, we won't add that. And then as soon as they get him into the U.S., they break all those rules. Because sadly, going back to an actual Pinkerton's case from the 19th century, the U.S. Supreme Court has said, however you get jurisdiction, you can pretty much do whatever you want. Even though theoretically, when you extradite him, you're limited. The court's U.S. court's jurisdiction is limited to the terms of that extradition. They have been very liberal in their very pro-government in their interpretation of what those limits are. So whatever the U.S. government is now telling the courts, I would use it as if new evidence is going to come in, I would use it as an excuse to introduce new evidence for Assange. And the new evidence could be it goes to the credibility of the U.S. government's claims. All the times the U.S. government's been caught lying in any extradition around the world, and that is a long, long, long list. Second, how they've already been caught lying in this very case and lying to the court below in this very case. As you note, the sociopath who came out and said he was basically a rat the entire time and it was a whole long extended entrapment scheme. Use it as an opportunity to stick that in front of the court. If any new evidence is going to come in, then any new evidence that goes to the credibility of the government's claims should come in. And third, they're lying about the prison sentencing stuff. They do this all the time because there are so many. I would look at the Epstein example. The reality is look at the McAfee example. I mean, even though I love Spain, the reality is, how is it high profile political targets keep ending up dead when the U.S. wants extradition or U.S. gets them locked up? And so if I was his team, I would make it political across the board. It's already political. There's massive backroom pressure on these judges to go a certain way. I'd be very curious how the assignment works. That was going to be a follow-up question. In the U.S., we're supposed to have random assignment of judges. But in my political cases, it always seems certain people end up magically getting assigned. So I'd be curious about that process. But it's a political war, so wage political war back and introduce all the evidence, the U.S. government's long history of lying in extradition, the U.S. government lying in this very case to the British courts already, and the U.S. government is lying about sentencing. And lawyers like me and others would be happy to file affidavits to this effect. What they've done. They make all kinds of promises. They're being very careful and couched. They can't guarantee. The U.S. Prosecution Department of Justice cannot guarantee what sentence he gets and cannot guarantee where he goes. And traditionally, someone that they have those espionage allegations against is placed in extreme isolation. And they can also cite as an example what's happening to the January 6th defendants right now. People who haven't even been convicted of a crime are being beaten, are being isolated for 23 hours out of 24. Just put the U.S. government on trial. It's long overdue they be put on trial. They want to introduce new evidence, introduce the evidence that the U.S. government has a long history and litany of lying, especially in this case.
Right.
Can I just say, can it be won?
Absolutely. I think that's entirely the right approach. Can I just say a few things about assignment of judges? This is, of course, always kept very secret in Britain. It's not entirely random. Anybody knows it's not random. Obviously, you have certain judges who are selected for this sort of thing. It's, by the way, general in most cases. I mean, you have judges who, to some extent, specialise in particular areas and they tend to turn up. And in this particular case, you can be absolutely sure that they'll be very careful to select whoever is picked. The agency that does the choice, that makes the choice, is the Lord Chief Justice's office. That's where it usually happens. So, it's a supposedly impartial officials, Lord Chief himself, they're all involved. But, the telephone calls that I talked about, let's be straightforward about it, they happen. It's not supposed to happen. I'm sure it is happening. I'm sure there is pressure like that there. But to make it political, first of all, let's just go through some of the things that Robert was saying. First of all, he's absolutely right. It's a completely political case. We all know that it's a completely political case. Secondly, I know for a fact, this I do know, that the judges have already made the point to the High Court that any promises that the US government makes about what kind of prison conditions Assange is going to be subjected to if he ever finds himself to the United States, that there is no way to bind the US government to those sort of promises. And, of course, those promises are unenforceable. There's nothing you can do. There's even a case, by the way, and this is useful, a rather, I'm going to say it straightforwardly, terrible man, Abu Hamza, who was involved in Al-Qaeda activities. He was extradited by Britain to the United States. There are all kinds of concerns expressed in his extradition about the sort of conditions that he would be held in. Apparently, the US made all kinds of promises. Apparently, all those promises amounted not to very much when he did finally get to the United States. So I know for a fact that that point has already been made about the fact that there is lots of evidence about the defense could bring. Now, it's important to say it's not just this man in Iceland, the sociopath. There were many points that the lawyers, Assange's lawyers, tried to get across to the judge in the lower court, in the court below. And the judge in the court below was extremely unwilling to listen to many of the points that Assange's lawyers were trying to make, especially, by the way, on First Amendment issues. They wanted to sort of broaden it, to bring up issues about the First Amendment. The judge basically didn't understand the First Amendment points, or pretended that she didn't understand. More likely, she pretended she didn't understand. But there was lots of evidence, affidavits, all kinds of things that they wanted to bring up that they weren't allowed to. So it's not just the sociopath and the problems with his evidence. There's lots of other pieces of evidence that they might want to bring up too. And I agree. I think that this is very extraordinary that this has been granted permission to appeal on this basis. I mean, it seems very strange that it's happened. It could be that because the appellant is the United States government, there is some kind of view, well, maybe we should give the US on this very political case their day in court, but we're not really intending to extradite Assange, but, you know, we'll just hear them, send them away. I know that happens too, but you can't assume that. But if there's going to be a hearing, a big hearing, then by all means, bring all these things up. Talk about the First Amendment, talk about the problems in the evidence, talk about the way in which the sociopath is now contradicting what the indictment says. Bring up all of these things. Bring up the fact that Assange was being listened into whilst he was in the embassy, that there was a company that was listening to him, listening to him when he was talking to his lawyers and breaching, for example, privilege, and passing on that information, apparently, to the US government. The lower court judge refused to hear any of that. So maybe this is the opportunity in the High Court to hear it there, to argue it all out there. I know that is being considered and it's being prepared. And can I say, the law firm, Gareth Pierce, is a lawyer who is very, very skilled at political cases. I mean, she's represented Irish Republican Army people, for example. So and famously so, and exposed police malpractice in prosecuting them. So she's a very politically savvy person.
Is she connected to the case that the movie was made about?
Absolutely. She appears in it. I think it was Emma Thompson, played her.
Emma Thompson.
Appallingly yes. Badly, by the way. Appallingly
the great,
badly.
The U2 song is the theme song. Yes, I'm blank. I mean, great Daniel Day-Lewis.
The name of the father, yeah.
Exactly. Yep. The name of the father.
The name of the father. Great exactly. film. Great film.
Yeah, she is the lawyer. If you actually meet her at all, you will know she's nothing like that. But having said that, it is a great film. But that's her. That's the person who's representing Assange.
You know, I think that's who I talked to briefly. I just didn't. I would have made a special effort. I didn't realize. I didn't draw the connection between the two.
No. So, I mean, she's a very, very good lawyer. I mean, she's a very good technical lawyer. She's also, as I said, very politically skilled. She's also, by all accounts, by the way, just saying this, a likable and nice person. So she's got all of these things. Anyway, I've always felt he's got a really good team, and they know all of these things very well. And most of the barristers who've been acting for Assange, it's also a pretty strong team there too.
Yeah, but if this is political, if all this stuff is political, Robert Alexander, I imagine the phone calls, Robert, are coming from the likes of Boris Johnson to the judges. Could be. Boris may be getting
I would assume
not Boris himself.
What I mean by that is it's coming at the highest levels, the pressure, right?
Yeah. I would assume the intelligence agencies.
I mean, is there a chance for this to be fought in the courts and for Assange to come out ahead? Because it seems like the U.S., when they want somebody, they get them. I mean, that's the way I'm looking at it. They're not giving up, and they want Assange. I mean, the mainstream media, as it doesn't care. Leaders around the EU in Australia, they don't care. It seems like, you know, you go back to like the Tucker Carlson NSA thing that happened a couple days ago, and Glenn Greenwald said it. You know, everyone in D.C. is scared to death of the deep state, of the surveillance state. I'm paraphrasing what he said, but it seems that everyone is... No one's going to come to Assange's rescue. No world leader, nobody in government. The U.S. is dead set on bringing him back. I mean, what do you think, Robert? Is there a chance?
Yeah, I think so, because the politics cuts both ways. Assange, I think this is a case they had to defend in the court of public opinion. They've done and then leverage whatever happens in the court of law towards the court of public opinion. And what Alexander is saying in terms of the court's own recognition of what they're really supposed to do here is present. And courts don't like to perceive themselves as political hacks who will harlot the law. And so I agree that the more political justices won't care about that as much as the more justices who, when they look in the mirror, they say, I'm a great justice because I put the law first, not politics first. And that's where I think if they continue to escalate the stakes, I mean, Kim.com has still not been extradited from New Zealand because he understood that, and he just ratcheted up times 10 and then kept having an implicit threat that if I get extradited, my people are going to rat out and help anybody and everybody against those that have been targeted. And I think in that same mindset mentality, I mean, you go back to Ochoa. Now, there was probably a wink and a nod that happened there. But here, you had the greatest drug dealer of the time, supposed to be extradited from Spain to the United States. Now, maybe the attorney general didn't intervene with Barry Seal, and Barry Seal gets whacked. And so, but the message the Spanish government got was send him back to Colombia, where he was going to, you know, serve jail time in Colombia, which wasn't quite jail time. And that was a high profile political target. So there's historical examples for a range of political reasons, courts pushing back on the U.S. extradition request. And it's not clear from the Biden administration side. If I was Assange's team, I'd probably put some of this into that. You know, a lot of the Biden people were there in the Obama administration that declined to bring this precise prosecution, number one, said it was a U.S. constitutional violation. Number two, there's at least word that there's a split within the Justice Department, the Biden administration, about whether they should have even appealed and whether they should have even gone forward. So there's a lot of PR pressure in the Assange case, especially now that it's distant from Trump and Russiagate, which, you know, the sort of the left tied him up with that. And that's where, you know, you have John Cusack feels, obligated to give his insightful legal commentary as an actor bashing Assange. You have those kind of nitwits. But most of that has faded and really receded. So I think if he continues to wage a smart political war, both in the courts and in the court of public opinion, I think he still has an unusually good chance to win on the extradition, as long as he either gets a little lucky or the Lord Chief Justice does the right thing in terms of appointment, then I think he's got a fair chance.
I agree with that, actually. And I have to say that I would personally, on balance, be surprised now if he is extradited. I think that to take this step of extraditing Assange after the fact that the lower court judge, for, you know, very incomplete reasons, but she said no, he shouldn't be. I think that to go a step further now with all the political arguments that Robert is saying, to actually extradite him at this point, I think that would be surprising. Now, as for the Lord Chief, everybody says that he's a good man, very sound. We'll see. I mean, he's no friend of the government, apparently. I mean, he's had his problems with them. So we'll see. But definitely, Robert put it exactly right. The kind of judge you want is a conservative judge committed to the law, somebody who gets up in the morning and says, I am a judge. My duty is to the law. I want to abide by that. Of course, there's always ambition. People want to go up. They want to become members of the Court of Appeal. They want to go beyond the Court of Appeal. Some of them want to go to our Supreme Court. There's always that. And that can't be discounted. And you get very political people who want to do that. There's all sorts of strange stories that you hear about judges who make decisions that some people don't approve of being shelved, in other words, not given cases. There's all those kind of pressures. Just, you know, be worldly about this. It happens. But a very strong judge who is committed to the law tends to resist that. And strangely, that tends to be rewarded in a strange way, because that kind of judge gets respected by the others within this very tight cast of judges that I'm talking about. So we'll see. It's different from the US, I sometimes feel, because I get the sense that in the US, the judiciary is so enormous and so diffused that it's more easy to find political judges like that horrendous judge you had in the Flynn case, whose name I'm glad to say I've forgotten. But in Britain, because it's all the judges in the High Court are basically located in one place. They have all offices in the same building. They all know each other. It's much smaller. They have a commitment to the common law of England, which this is not, by the way, a part. The extradition isn't part of the common law of England. But anyway, they have all that, and they meet in the Inns of Court. They have dinners together, all those sort of things. Sometimes a bit more difficult to pressure them than it would be in the US, and to pick and choose judges as it would be in the US. At least that's my impression. Maybe I'm getting the US completely wrong.
Well, that's probably very apt about the U.S. I mean, the question is, and I see it as two things. It's time, you know, Julian Assange has been on trial long enough. It's time to put the United States government on trial. And the other is, I see the British judiciary is on trial here. Are they able and capable of pushing back against massive political pressure from the biggest government in the world to honor their legal traditions and legal rights? And that's where I think, and if it's, as long as it's framed that way, I think there's more incentive for them to let Assange go and to say, this is who we are as British, this is who we are as British judges, than it is to, they're going to look like political hacks if they reverse the judgment, and they'll look like they're just puppets of the United States government if they end up extraditing him under these circumstances.
Robert, you put it exactly right. That's exactly what, that's exactly my feeling, that you've put it precisely correctly.
Final question, Robert. Does this really matter for Biden, the Biden White House? The Biden White House, does Julian Assange really matter? You mentioned Trump and how it didn't matter and how they tied it together to multiple things. For the Biden White House, is Julian Assange, the extradition, getting Assange, does it matter to him? If he did extradite him, would he take a PR hit? What exactly does this mean for the Biden White House?
Well, it's what you guys have been talking about. This is another example of an internal war. where you have, you know, one wing of the government wants one thing and another wing actually wants something totally the opposite. The sort of deep state apparatus, the old school CIA, Defense Department, that crowd, want Julian Assange made an example out of so that nobody else ever gets the idea to do the same thing he did. I mean, here's a guy who exposed more whistleblower secrets against the deep state apparatus probably in a world history just by himself as a single individual. And they don't want anybody else to get the bright idea to do that again. And so for them, that's who's always been driving the Julian Assange extradition indictment train. On the flip side, the political people in the Biden administration don't want anything to do with the case. They see the case as punitive. There's a lot of friends on their left that are mad about this even happening. And what happens if he's actually extradited? Then they have a whole U.S. political debacle. That trial, as much as they try in the Northern District of Virginia to suppress cases, I've volunteered my services to be part of the case if he gets extradited here. There's other very skilled, politically savvy lawyers. I mean, it'll be a massive team. It'll be a real dream team effort. And it will be a holy war against deep state apparatus, using that trial as the pretext to do so, and going after all these problematic ways these trials have been conducted in the United States. So it'll make Chicago 7 look like a minor skit by comparison. So politically, the Biden administration knows they want nothing. They don't want a whole bunch of talk about all the stuff Assange exposed, reminders that this happened during part of the Obama administration, reminders that Biden is the one who brought him back. They want that all done with. They want Iraq to be erased from memory, Afghanistan to be erased from memory, all of that stuff. They don't want that to dominate the news cycle for several months. So that's why the political people actually didn't even want the appeal to go forward, from what I heard. It's the deep state apparatus still runs our government, unfortunately. But the political people would be thrilled if the British High Court would say, golly gee, we just can't do it.
Yeah, that would be probably like the trial of the century, yeah. If Assange was to be extradited to the U.S. I mean, my God, that would be massive. Mm. Yeah. Anything else you guys want to add, Alexander, Robert?
I just wanted to ask, I mean, it would be heard by a jury. I mean, how jury is selected for those kind of trials in the U.S.?
Well, if done right, you require massive jury selection, and you require, you know, voir dire, it's called voir dire, but you would require there to be written questionnaires. If you do it right, jury selection, you get the jurors' information months in advance of the trial. With their social media footprints and other databases that are available, you can find out tons of information about people. You can predict them with high degrees of accuracy. And if you do focus groups and mock trials and juror surveys to know exactly who will vote for acquit and who won't, and you do your job, you can really, because of the notoriety of the case, because of the political issues it touches, you should be entitled to very vibrant voir dire. What normally happens in these cases is that they're low enough profile that, especially in our U.S. federal court system, they give you about 30 minutes to an hour to pick a jury. I mean, it's a joke. You as a lawyer can't even ask them questions. It's whatever the judge's questions are. And a lot of those tend to be leading. But if you know what you're doing, and Assange's team collectively will, then there are ways to force the judge to, under various constitutional rules, because you're entitled to an impartial jury, to give meaningful jury selection. And if he got meaningful jury selection, he would have an excellent chance to win. And that doesn't even talk about the constitutional issues that would be implicated in the case. Because the British extradition ultimately didn't decide that this violated, you know, certain free, internationally recognized and British free press principles, doesn't resolve the question of whether it violates the First Amendment in the United States. And this would be a hard case for the U.S. Supreme Court to turn down. Again, there's political cross currents when it comes with Assange. There's people on both the left and the right who like him. It's more your low IQ, well, not low IQ, but low information person who has negative opinions about him, someone who doesn't really know a lot about the case. And that would be a compelling Supreme Court issue, too. So, and a lot of these secret, quasi-secret Guantanamo-esque trials they've been doing in the Northern District of Virginia in these whistleblower cases that involve national security, their ability, they've got away with it because no one has paid attention to most of those cases. That won't be possible with Assange. And then that whole justice method of justice will be under massive scrutiny, which is something they also don't want here. They want to lock these people up quietly and quasi-secretly, hide evidence even from the lawyer on the grounds of national security, which is a clear-cut Sixth Amendment violation in the United States, inability to meaningfully cross-examine accusers, etc. All of that would be put on trial, and everybody with Assange here has made that clear to the U.S. government. That's why there's a lot of people in the Justice Department that would rather not have this fight occur.
Interesting. Very interesting, because, of course, I mean, jury selection is basically unchallengeable here in Britain. If you go to a trial court, I mean, it's almost impossible to challenge jurors in any meaningful way.
If they acquit them in the United States, that's it. End of story. Government has no right of appeal.
Yeah. Yes. Well, as you may also know, in Britain, even that isn't true anymore. And double jeopardy, which we used to have in Britain, I'm afraid that's basically, as we say in Britain, gone west. In other words, it's dying. It's the most unsatisfactory things, all of which has come from the politicians, by the way. But, I mean, that sounds very encouraging, but I do hope, notwithstanding that I think he will have an outstanding team defending him, and I hope, Robert, absolutely that you're there, part of that team, can I just say? I hope that it doesn't come to that and that the High Court will do exactly as you said. Remember that they are the High Court of England and that they actually understand that they're on trial themselves and that they will actually do that which they in duty and in law should do, which is refuse to extradite Julian Assange and reject this appeal.
Well said. All right. We will leave it there. Once again, Robert Barnes, where can people find you?
Best place is vivabarneslaw.locals.com.
And I will put that link in the description box underneath this video. Thank you, Mr. Robert Barnes, very much for joining us in this video. Alexander, the Oracle of London, thank you very much. That was a great, great video, guys. Thank you. Take care, everybody.